Short time ago, we began once again observing the annual Holy Day cycle with Spring Holy Days. And observing the annual Holy Days is one of the fundamental beliefs of the Church of God. We believe that God's Holy Days are required, commanded for Christians today. We have trust and faith in that. And so it's obviously important to observe these annual Sabbaths on the correct dates. And we want to do that. But in order to do that, as a group, as a church, we have to agree on a calendar that will be used. How are we going to determine those dates? Because depending on which calendar is observed, is followed, observances of the annual Holy Days can be at different times, possibly weeks apart, because there are, again, a number of different calendars that some have used. Occasionally, there are questions within the church about the Hebrew calendar, and over the years, a few individuals have developed their own calendar. Members of God's church who have come up with their own calendars, and they proposed that the church use those calendars they have come up with to determine the observance of the Holy Days, to use those rather than the Hebrew calendar. But again, how can we be assured that a calendar is accurate and compatible with Scripture? Is there such a calendar? Where in Scripture can you find the biblical calendar? Or by what authority can a person devise his own calendar? The purpose of this Bible study is not to go into all the details, because the subject of, we have a 27-page study paper on that subject of the Hebrew calendar, which you certainly can read through if you'd like to go into it more in depth. This study will give an overview, basically taken from that study paper, which I hope will be helpful. It may never be an issue again in your life, but you at least will have heard what some of the issues are when it comes to how do we determine when to keep God's holy days? Because there are people who think that some of the holy days that were either a month early or a month late or weeks early or weeks late, based on the calendar they're using. How do we know that, you know, we're keeping them on the right date? How can we have confidence in that? Because if that's important in God's eyes, we want to be confident that we're keeping the holy days when we should. So the purpose of this study is to explain the position that we've taken in the Church of God, a worldwide association, on this subject. How we came to the position we have, and how we've come to the conclusion about whether or not to use the Hebrew calendar, how do we come to that position? It really, and again, if you have comments or questions along the way, please raise your hand and we can discuss those a little further. But, you know, there are some key questions that when it comes to the calendar, is there sufficient information in the Bible itself to develop a calendar? Is there or isn't there? What about the history and the accuracy of the Hebrew calendar? How was it developed? Where did that come from? Who had the authority to establish the calendar? Here's a question that comes up from time to time. Should the calendar be based on calculation or observation? In other words, somebody has to see the new moon of the seventh month, and when they see it, that then determines all the time and dates of all the other holy days. So should the calendar be based on calculation? Should it be based on observation? Or both? How was the calendar administered? How was it preserved throughout the ages? What about the rules of postponement? You may have heard of those. You may never have heard of those. You may never want to hear about them again. But we'll talk a little bit about, so you're at least familiar with the term, the rules of postponement. I know at Ambassador College we had a whole semester on the subject of the Hebrew calendar, and went through that class and did all the work in that class, and then, you know, probably haven't covered this subject since. Or maybe I have a few times, but not very often. It just doesn't come up a lot, but yet it's good to be familiar with some of the principles involved. There were two exhaustive studies completed by the church on this subject back in the 1990s, and the conclusion reached in our COGWA study paper, if you've looked at it, maybe just read the conclusion, is consistent with that those conclusions reached by the church in those studies through the years. And that conclusion is that the Hebrew calendar, also known as the Jewish calendar, was preserved by the proper Jewish authorities. They were the ones who also preserved the Hebrew scriptures. And we'll look at some of the verses about that. And we believe it is therefore the correct calendar to be used for observing the holy day. But the Hebrew calendar is the correct calendar to be used. Let's look at a statement in Genesis 7 and verse 11. Genesis 7, and we find something interesting here. This is related to the flood. Genesis 7, verse 11. We read that in the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, some kind of calendar was being used. On that day, all the fountains of the great deep were broken up and the windows of heaven were opened. And so, second month, 17th day of the month. Then we read in Genesis 8, verse 3 and 4. And the waters receded continually from the earth. At the end of the 150 days, the waters decreased. Notice the date. Then the ark rested in the seventh month, the 17th day of the month, on the mountains of Ararat. So from the second month, back in Genesis 7, to the seventh month, 5 months, 150 days, we're told. So here, months here are listed as averaging 30 days over 5 consecutive months. So 5 months go by, 150 days go by, or 30 days a month, an average. Got to be some kind of calendar, second month, seventh month, etc., 17th day of the month. Did ancient Israel use some kind of calendar when leaving Egypt? Let's go back to Exodus 12 and verse 2. Exodus 12 and verse 2. The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, verse 2, this month shall be your beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you. It shall be the first month of the year. Apparently Moses had knowledge of a calendar of some kind that's mentioned. If you look at Nehemiah chapter 8, Nehemiah chapter 8 and let's look at verse 2. Nehemiah 8 and verse 2. So Ezra the priest brought the law before the assembly of men and women and all who could hear with understanding on the first day of the seventh month. The first day of the seventh month. So clearly there was some kind of calendar in place. When the Jews returned from Babylonian exile, while there they kept the Babylonian month names. But they returned and there was some kind of calendar in use. Now it's also true that historically there was more than one calendar in use during the time of Christ's ministry when he was on the earth. But the Bible neither outlines a calendar, nor does it provide enough calendar clues or hints to answer all the questions that are necessary for producing a calendar. The Bible just doesn't give us enough information to do that. So again, I want to discuss some very basic aspects of how we determine God's annual holy days in our modern day. First, a basic principle, and that is this. All calendars are imperfect. All calendars are imperfect. So if that's the case, how can we know which calendar is being used when God revealed the annual festivals in Leviticus 23? How can we know that? Because again, the Bible just doesn't give us enough details to build or construct a festival calendar. It does tell us when the festivals occur according to a calendar, but again, it doesn't give us all the details about that calendar. But all calendars need adjustments. Can you think of any examples that you're familiar with? All calendars need adjustments. No calendars are perfect. How do you know that? What do we see today that we have to do because all, Steve? Leap year. All calendars need adjustment. Our Gregorian calendar that we use, one day has to be added every 4 years to make 29 or a leap year. 2024 will be a leap year. But even with that adjustment, still doesn't match perfectly with what's been calculated as 365.24 days in a year. Every year, 365.24 days in a year. So what happens to the leap year concept periodically? Maybe we're aware of this, maybe not. Every 100 years, there has to be a skipped leap year in which there won't be a February 29th in a 4-year period. But every 100 years, that happens. So there are adjustments that have to be made to the calendar because of that. The Gregorian calendar officiated by Pope Gregory, that's why it's called Gregorian, is a solar calendar strictly determined by the sun. So we really can't use it exclusively to determine God's holy days. The Muslim calendar, it's an interesting calendar. The Muslim calendar is a lunar calendar only, a lunar calendar. It has a 354 or 355 day year. So it's about 11 days short of a solar year. So then what do? If you don't make some kind of adjustment, how do you resolve the 11-day difference between a solar year of 12 months and the Muslim calendar that has a lunar year of 12 months? If you don't make some kind of adjustment, obviously you're going to be doing things in different seasons than what they're named, and the calendar gets all, you know, out of whack. It's not going to be in sync with the seasons eventually. So adjustments have to be made. The Chinese calendar, interestingly enough, adds a leap month about once every 3 years. We call it an intercalary month. The Chinese calendar does it, adds a leap month about once every 3 years. What about the Hebrew calendar that we base the holy days on? The Hebrew calendar alternates between a month of 29 days and a month of 30 days. A month of 29 days, a month of 30 days. So it also falls about 11 days short of a solar year, so an extra 13th month, intercalary month, is added every 3 years in the Hebrew calendar, or 7 times in a 19-year time cycle, 7 times an extra month. So there are months that the Hebrew calendar has years, the Hebrew calendar has 13 months instead of 12. To make up for the difference, just to keep it in sync with the seasons. So the Hebrew calendar does use the sun to determine the seasons, but also a particular new moon to determine the beginning of the sacred year. And again, you're familiar with that, but let's look at Genesis 1. The Hebrew calendar uses both the solar and lunar factors to determine a calendar. Genesis 1, all the way back at creation, verse 14 to 16. Notice what we read here. Then God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years. And let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth." And it was so. And so, then God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, the sun, the lesser light to rule the night, the moon. He also made the stars. So, two great lights in the heaven, the sun and the moon. The statement is clear in these verses that the two great lights are for the purpose of establishing seasons and for days and years. Now, what's interesting about that word season, translated season, it comes from the Hebrew word moed, or M-O-E-D, plural be moedim, It's translated seasons. And that word is never used for spring, summer, winter, fall. It's never used for climatic seasons. It's not talking about those kind of seasons. It's always used only for appointed time or festivals or holy days. A different word is used when it wants to talk about winter, spring, summer, fall. But this word seasons, moedim, is always used only for appointed times, which could be festivals, holy days. Let's look at an example of that in Leviticus 23 and verse 2. Leviticus 23 and verse 2, where we find all the holy days listed. Leviticus 23 and verse 2. Beginning in verse 1, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, the feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my feasts." So they're God's feasts. Not Jews, not Gentiles, not human beings. These are God's feasts. He established them. He made them. The word feasts here is that same word for seasons back in Genesis 1, moedim. It's the same word. God said, "You shall proclaim holy day, holy convocations. These are my moedim, my appointed festivals, my feasts." The same word for seasons back in Genesis chapter 1. So what the Hebrews have preserved is a solar lunar calendar that coincides with the seasons, and it's calculated by both movements of the sun and cycles of the moon. And we know the early festivals coincide with the springtime, the spring harvest season, and the later festivals, the fall festivals, coordinate or are tied to the fall harvest season. We have the spring holy days and the fall holy days. Spring harvest season, fall harvest season. And so it's tied to both the seasons dictated by the sun, but also cycles of the moon. Now, who does the Bible point us to as the ones who guarantee the accuracy of the oracles of God? Who does the Bible point us to? Christ said the oracles were given to the Jews. Let's read in Romans 3. Romans 3. The Bible points us to the Jews as the guardians of the oracles of God, it says, which we certainly would include the scriptures, and would it include the festival calendar as well. Romans 3, verse 1 and 2. "What advantage then has the Jew, or what is the profit of circumcision? Much in every way. Chiefly because to them were committed the oracles of God." Chiefly to them were committed the oracles of God. And then what did Jesus say about that? In Matthew 23, beginning in verse 1. Now, were the Jewish leaders setting personally a right example of how to live a godly life? Of course not. But despite that, Matthew 23, verse 1, Jesus spoke to the multitude and to the disciples, saying, "The scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Therefore, whatever they tell you to observe, that observe and do. But do not do according to their works, for they say and do not do." So Christ said that although the Jewish leaders weren't personally setting a good example, they still were entrusted to make certain judgments. To them were committed the oracles of God. So whatever they tell you to observe, that observe and do. Now, a little bit of history. Within the Sanhedrin, who recalls what was the Sanhedrin? Anybody have a brief definition of the Sanhedrin? Anybody? Yes. Carl? Yeah, they were kind of the Supreme Court in a sense. A Supreme Court made up of Pharisees, scribes, priests. They were made up of a number of people. But the Sanhedrin are kind of a Supreme Court. So within the Sanhedrin, there is a group of two or three priests. It always included the high priest. They formed a calendar committee within the Sanhedrin. That had a Hebrew name, which I can't pronounce. It looks like Sad Hiber. But their job was to determine the proper dates for the festivals and then proclaim those dates from the temple to Israel and to Jews scattered in other parts of the world. That was a prime responsibility they had. The important point is that the Sanhedrin and its calendar committee, like the Jewish religious leaders during the Second Temple period, this is the rebuilt temple during that time, they did have the authority to maintain the Hebrew calendar. According to what Christ said and what Paul wrote, they had a certain authority to maintain a Hebrew calendar, and they did that. You know, they were the authority that were looked to provide the right dates. We also should realize there is no reliable historical evidence. And I don't know if Mr. Johnson will cover this in the classes he's doing on modern church history. Probably not, different topic, but really interesting series of lectures he's been giving. We've been following those. But there's no reliable historical evidence that the Church of God as a body has ever used anything but the Hebrew calendar when it came to observing the holy days. The first recorded controversy that we're aware of over the calendar among Church of God groups was in the 1930s and 1940s with C.O. Dodd, one of the elders in the Church of God Seventh Day, and it had to do with something Mr. Armstrong wrote about the calendar and about the holy days. And I'd like to quote from a letter that Mr. Armstrong wrote in 1940 about the calendar. This is what he wrote. He said, "Briefly, after very exhaustive study and counsel with the brethren who also have made thorough study of the question for years, the facts are these. Research reveals two basic points on this question." The intercalary months, that 13-month, questions that come up about that. First, God did not record it in the Bible, which gives us absolutely nothing more to go on than I have stated above. Second, history is vague on the subject, shedding little light that can be accepted and trusted. Yet we know God gave his people a fixed rule for calculating time periods and for figuring when to hold the festivals of God. In conclusion, unless God has preserved his sacred calendar through the Jews, then we do not know how to figure Passover or any of the holy days this year. For there is no authority for any other way. There is no Bible authority whatsoever for figuring the first day of the first month from the new moon nearest the spring equinox. God did not commit his oracles or the preservation of his times to profane history, or to the Roman Catholics, but to the Israelites, and they have been preserved by the Jews. So that was a conclusion Mr. Armstrong came to back in 1940, that the only place we have to turn to is what the Jews have preserved as far as a calendar. So that historically, whenever there is evidence of the church of the Church of God observing the holy days, it's always been according to the Hebrew or Jewish calendar. Now, I'll comment on that further as far as what has happened in recent years, a deviation from that. But what about the accuracy? How accurate is the Hebrew calendar? If you're writing anything down, write down this number, 29.53059. And then just for comparison, 29.53059. Now, what does that mean? There is amazing accuracy in the Hebrew calendar. In the way the Jews reveal their method of calculation, a lunar month has 29.53059 days. According to NASA, the difference between one new moon and the next is 29.530588. 29.530588. If you wrote down that first number, you know that there's only 17 milliseconds difference. 2 millionths of a day as far as the difference between what NASA has calculated as the length of a lunar month, days in a lunar month, and what the Hebrew calendar says. The difference is only 17 milliseconds, or 2 millionths of a day. 29.53059 by the Hebrew calendar, 29.530588 by NASA. So very accurate, incredibly accurate. That number, 29.53099, was revealed by Hillel II. And I'll have more to say about him in just a little bit. But again, incredibly accurate. What is the significance of the first day of the seventh month on the Jewish calendar? What's the significance of the first day of the seventh month on the Jewish calendar? Anybody? First day, what did you say? Well, it's the first day of the civil year. It's the Jewish New Year, the first day of the civil year. But also, it's the day from which all the holy days for the upcoming year are calculated, from that first day of the seventh month. And this is where a term you may have heard comes in called the Molad of Tishri, Tishri being the seventh month. Molad meaning birth or the new moon. The Molad of Tishri determines the first day of the seventh month of the year. And what feast do we have then? Feast of Trumpets. Feast of Trumpets on the first day of the seventh month. So that the Molad is the new moon, or it's also called the conjunction, when the moon is high in the sky, but you still can't see it. It's not observable, but it's up high in the sky, but completely dark. It's the most important date on the Hebrew calendar because all the other dates for the holy days are calculated from that date, the Molad of Tishri. And this is where the question of calculation or observation comes in. Because there are those who say, well, you have to calculate it only by observing from Jerusalem, and when you see it, that determines. There are those who say, well, what about observing it from over here? Or what if it's cloudy? Can't see it. But there's more significance to this than just that. The Molad of Tishri marks the beginning of the civil year on the Hebrew calendar. And that date is determined. Once that date is determined, then the dates of the holy days are calculated from that date. There is an exception clause. And again, I won't go into a lot of detail, but the Molad of Tishri, first day of the seventh month, the Molad and the first day of the seventh month don't exist until declared by the rules of the calendar. There are rules of the calendar as far as how that is determined. And this is where those rules of postponements come into play. And again, we won't go into a lot of detail about those, but it helps us to establish the first day of the seventh month or the Molad of Tishri. Even if we can't know all the details of their purpose, those rules of postponement, they are a part of the calendar. They still that's how the Hebrew calendar is formed. And what's interesting is that for many centuries, the rules were kept secret. They were kept secret until first when Jerusalem was destroyed in 70 AD and the Jews were dispersed and scattered. Well, for a while, the priests and those who were not part of that calendar committee were able to function and still calculate the calendar, disseminate that information. But the Roman Empire clamped down on even that. And that's when Hillel II decided to have those rules no longer secret and make those rules available to all Israelites so others could calculate because they had been encroached upon by the Roman Empire and forbidden to do that. And so he just disseminated the information. It had been secret for quite a long time. But they are part of calculating this Molad of Tishri. Now, what's interesting about observation, trying to determine it solely by looking at it, the time from when the moon goes dark, that is the astronomical new moon, until the first crescent appears by observation, can stretch over a period as long as 3 evenings. It doesn't happen like that, and it doesn't happen necessarily right away, but it can be one, be two, or it can be three evenings before that first crescent appears. And when someone by observation could say, well, that's the beginning. But that's by observation. However, by calculation, this is how the Hebrew calendar determines it, by calculation and not by observation. It's based on, and it sounds technical, but it's based on the mean length of the full cycle of the moon. That is that 29.53 days. They use calculation to determine the beginning of the molad of Tishri. And again, that's not an even number. It's not 30 days or 32 or 28, or it's 29.53. So to have a usable calendar, you have to make some adjustments again, because it's not just an even number. But more important, when it comes to Scripture, there is no Scripture that demands observation for determining the first day of the month, of the seventh month. There's no Scripture that says that. Nor is there any Scripture that forbids calculation. There's no Scripture that really comments on it. But some say that the molad has to be determined by observation alone. No Scripture that says that. That's human idea. So, what about postponements? Again, it sounds like a technical term, and there are some technical aspects to it. And there are four rules of postponement. They're listed in our study paper. I may read one or two just as a sample. But for much of the time, the actual day of the molad, that is the new moon or conjunction, for much of the time, the moon is high in the sky but still dark. Sometimes you can't see the beginning crescent for up to three nights, and still the molad has begun. So, again, it's done by calculation rather than observation. The way it's calculated, sometimes the molad is postponed by one day, sometimes even 2 days. It could be any one of those 3 days before you can even see it. So sometimes the molad is postponed a day or two. But again, it's done by calculation. The Hebrew calendar, which we believe to be the one used in Scripture, requires some rules of calculation. Again, those four major rules are called postponements. There's a Hebrew name for it. But those were the rules that were kept secret for centuries until the Jews were scattered and Hillel II decided to go ahead and publish those things so that they could be calculated. But the question is, and this is where some people get into concern, do the rules of postponement move the holy days off of where they should be? And again, some people say, well, you can't postpone the holy days, and yet you've got these rules of postponement. Or some will say, well, the Jews have just added their own ideas to the calendar for the sake of convenience. So how do we know that we can trust it? Well, it is true that one of the rules of postponement, there is one of the rules of postponement that prevents the Day of Atonement from falling either immediately before a weekly Sabbath or immediately after a weekly Sabbath. The Day of Atonement doesn't do that because of the rules of postponement. That is convenient, but is that the main reason for that rule? We just don't know. We simply don't know. But it is a rule of postponement. There's nothing unbiblical about any of the rules of postponement, and it can be shown that they do have an impact on making the Hebrew calendar more accurate, keeping it in sync with the seasons and keeping it accurate so that the Feast of Trumpets doesn't end up falling all the way into December, which would happen if you didn't make any changes or adjustments to the calendar. It could, the fall holidays could end up in the wintertime. Spring holidays could end up in the summertime. Those things could happen unless there were some adjustments. So I'll give you a couple of examples. For example, rule number one, if the Tishri Molad falls on Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday, then Tishri 1 is postponed 1 day. What is the reason behind it? Again, we simply don't know, but it keeps the calendar accurate. Another one, if the Tishri Molad occurs at or after noon, then Tishri 1 is postponed 1 day. But if doing that causes it to fall on rule number one, Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday. Then it's postpone another day. So these are the kind of things. Those are two of the rules of postponement. But the Hebrew calendar turns out to be more accurate with the rules of postponement than without them. It just turns out to be a whole lot more accurate. And keeping in sync with the seasons, it's better with the rules of postponement. Now, all calendars have rules. If the Gregorian calendar, in the Gregorian calendar, the month of February usually has 28 days, but as you know, every fourth year, it has 29 days. Have you ever heard anybody say, well, you can't do that because we're postponing March 1st and we're making spring come later? Ever heard anybody say that? Well, again, it's the same thing with the Hebrew calendar. Everyone understands that it's necessary to have an extra day every 4 years. And so it postpones things a day that year. But the Hebrew calendar is no different. It also has rules and procedures that are needed to keep it in sync with respect to the movements of the sun and the moon, those two great lights that God put in the skies. So it does that. So the Molad of Tishri, that is that first day of the seventh month, doesn't exist until declared by the rules of the Hebrew calendar, not by observation. The rules of postponement play a major part in establishing that first day of Tishri, which can be delayed a day or sometimes 2 days. That can happen. Who has the authority again? Who has the authority to give the final answer on any of these issues? Where does that authority come from? Over the years, more than a dozen different calendars have been put forward by various people as being the true biblical calendar. But none of them really answered all of those questions that we've looked at so far. There is no scripture. What scripture precisely defines the new moon? There isn't any scripture. What scripture explains the calculation of leap years? There isn't such a scripture. What scripture says that Jerusalem is the only location for sighting the new moon? That was somebody's idea. There's no scripture that says that has to be the case. What scripture gives the percentage of the surface of the moon that would qualify as a legitimate sighting of the new moon? 1%? 0.5%? 10%? What percent? Again, the Bible doesn't tell us. What scripture authorizes witnesses outside of Jerusalem to determine by observation when the new moon begins? What scripture gives an individual living in the 21st century the authority to answer these questions in developing his own version of the calendar? Because there are those who have tried to do that. And without scripture on his side, you know, by what authority would that calendar be established? And these are all questions that have, you know, we have to ask about the calendar. So, you know, based on the Jewish interpretation of the Old Testament scriptures we looked at, we see that Moses and Aaron were given responsibility. They were told, proclaim the festivals of God. We read there in Leviticus 23 and Exodus 12, proclaim the festivals, which means there had to be some kind of calendar they maintained to know when those festivals would occur. We saw that Christ accepted the role of the Sanhedrin as those who sat in Moses' seat. They were given responsibility. We don't know when it says in Romans, to the Jews were committed the oracles of God. We don't know what all was included in that, but we do know that the Hebrew calendar as we have it today was preserved by the same people who preserve the scriptures. We do know that much. And the Jews were required to keep some kind of calendar. So, two other issues that are good to comment on. One is history. What does history tell us? And what is responsibility? I've got a few more scriptures here. What does church history tell us about this issue? Again, I've already mentioned that in reality, very little. There's very little in church history that comments about calendar. Much of the past 2,000 years of church history is hidden. We don't know a lot about, you know, church history. We've got a lot more information. information about modern church history that Mr. Johnson is covering, but we can say that whenever there is any historical record of the church observing the holy days, pick any year, the observance is always based on the Hebrew calendar. Whenever there is any record, it's always based on the Hebrew calendar. There's not any record of a body of believers using any other calendar until very recent times, when some Church of God groups have rejected their Hebrew calendar, there are a few, and developed their own calendar by their own rules. Is that the correct thing to do? Well, again, some feel it is, and Church of God AWA, we don't believe that is the right thing to do, to just develop your own calendar, reject the Hebrew calendar. So when it comes to history, we really don't have a lot to go on other than whenever there is a record, it's always been the church using the Hebrew calendar. Second one is responsibility. Who has the responsibility for making decisions when the biblical text is not clear or doesn't really give us an answer? In most cases, we believe that that ends up being the responsibility of church leadership to make those decisions. If the church doesn't have the authority to render judgments in those kinds of things, then who does? Look at a couple of scriptures with me. Matthew 16 and verse 19. Matthew 16 and verse 19. In the context of Christ saying he would build his church, the gates of the grave would not prevail against it, verse 18. Notice what he said in verse 19. And I will give you, speaking to the apostles, the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, or whatever you should be binding on earth will be bound in heaven. They didn't just give them free reign to just make any decision or judgment, but if it should be and was right in God's eyes, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. What was Christ speaking about there? How about Matthew 18, verse 18? Matthew 18, verse 18. Assuredly I say to you, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. So, in other words, the disciples had responsibility to render certain judgments at times, to bind and loosen. And I think it is an example of Christ investing certain authority in the leadership of the church, beginning with the disciples of his day. There it is or it isn't. It seems that it is. So no one, not church leadership, nobody, has authority to instruct a person to do anything contrary to Scripture. Nobody has that authority to instruct someone to do anything contrary to Scripture. But what about decisions that cannot be determined by Scripture, that we just don't have enough information? Then, again, who has that responsibility? Or is it every man for himself? Well, there's a scripture that talks about what that led to at the end of the book of Judges, when every man did what was right in his own eyes, because there was no authority. And it ended up being chaos in Israel, and, you know, people, everybody doing what was right in their own eyes. So Christ did give certain authority, we believe. Someone, you know, at the conclusion of the Hebrew calendar issue, someone has to decide what calendar we're going to use for observing the holy days. What are our options? Well, we can create one. We can borrow one from some other church group, or we can follow the Hebrew calendar. And in Church of God AWA, and from the lessons of history, and from a little bit we do have in Scripture, we believe that the Hebrew calendar is appropriate for determining and observing God's festivals. And the fruit of that has been good. The fall holy days are in the fall, the spring holy days are in the spring, and the fruit of that has been good. So that's the conclusion we come to, that the Hebrew calendar is one we should be using. We've done that and continue to do that. So questions, comments, any other thoughts about some of those things? Now there's a lot more detail in our study paper, and I do have a handout that kind of summarizes what I've gone through today, and we can give that out now to everybody. You may have taken notes, and that's fine, but this is a one-page, actually front and back, I think, one-page summary of basics of the Hebrew calendar. And you're welcome to have a copy of that. And, you know, if you really want to search it out in more detail, again, you can read through our 25-page study paper. It's interesting, and there's a lot more detail, but this is just kind of a summary of the basics that I've covered today. So anybody have any questions or any comments? Is that Joe back there? I can't see who's... Oh, Ray? They had to have a calendar of some kind. And I think what's so interesting is that number of the days that the Hebrew calendar, 29 point whatever it was, you know, within 17 millionths, you know, or 17 milliseconds, you know, that's how close compared to the NASA calculations. Yeah. So, all right, God established it, gave us two lights, the sun and the moon. So, any other questions anybody have? Or, again, that I may have thoroughly confused you, or but I hope not. I hope, again, I wanted you at least to be familiar with the terms, because sometimes they do come up and, you know, somebody has an idea that, you know, it goes off in a different direction. At least you've heard why we make the decision we made and what it's based on. It is based on, you know, on certain fundamentals that are not in violation of the scriptures, but at least in harmony with what the Bible teaches and leads us. It ends up producing the good fruit of when we do keep God's holy days, they seem to be in sync with the seasons and the picture that the seasons portray to us, the spiritual lessons that we learn as well. So I hope it's helpful, and look over the summary I gave you. And again, if you're really interested, go through the study paper.